It takes a long time to get from humble beginnings to where you are now. What would you say would be the number one attribute that's driven you to that position?
The key ingredient, I think, was actually...
There's so many people, the first challenge that comes their way, they fold.
The most important thing, you've got to be adaptive, resourceful, innovative, and fast.
There's lots of talk at the moment about AI. Could you see a future where you perhaps have AI standing at the door of an open house, taking names and screening people or something?
Not yet. There's a lot of key things they've got to get right. But these AI tools need to come up with.
I'm Matthew Fraser, and this is Amazon Ecom Secrets. I'll be sharing with you the secrets that helped me go from millions in debt to an eight-figure entrepreneur. If you're ready to escape the 9-to-5 and live life on your terms, let me show you the way. Hey guys, welcome to Amazon Ecom Secrets. My name is Matthew Fraser, and today we've got the number one real estate agent and agency in Australia, Tate Branley is joining us in the house, and he's going to be sharing his insights into the real estate business and the synergy with Amazon.
Matt, you're way too kind. Thank you so much.
Welcome, mate. Really appreciate you coming on in.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here and really excited to really, you know, delve deep on a lot of hot topics today. I think we're going to cover off AI, what you're doing with Amazon, the metrics of business, marketing. Yeah, excited to be here.
Did I get that right though? Was it number one in Australia?
You can say whatever you want, yeah. Mate. You can say absolutely whatever you want. I guess, look, at the end of the day, definitely come from humble beginnings. Started in a caravan park, did my license. It was night school back in the day for 12 months and just went, you know, really, really hard, worked, had an insatiable work ethic. I think that made a big difference at the beginning. And met my beautiful wife not long after we set up Tate Branley Real Estate. It was actually called The Estate Specialists.
All right.
Yeah, I had a business owner.
I must have missed that one.
You did. Yeah, I had a business owner as well, Loretta Trevan. Hi, Loretta. I'm sure you'll get a chance to listen to this and reminisce a little bit too. But that's where we started. Unfortunately, she had some things personal that were going on in her life and unfortunately couldn't continue the journey. So, you know, I met Kristen not long after and had to pull her out of hairdressing. And it was interesting, our first day on the job, she's trying to work out the difference between cutting in hairdressing and cut and paste in, you know, computer
was
terms.
Was that her background? So, I had no idea.
Yeah, it was her background. And she was an absolute whiz straight off the bat, which was really lucky. And, you know, she got the, you know, the old throw, the deep end, and took off with property management not long after as well. Okay. So
you're a big player in this region, and I've known you for over a decade now. Mm. And for those who are listening now, I've actually bought a property that you sold, and I've also sold a property through you. So we've had both sides.
We have both sides of the coin.
But a lot of people see you've got your face on billboards and bus shelters and, you know, letterboxes, obviously. But you just touched on before you came from a caravan. What do you mean you came from a caravan? What was that?
Yeah, it was down at a place called Drifters Holiday Village. It's now called Ingenia. So, you know, just down in Chindra there, coincidentally, in 2005 it flooded as well, which is pretty wild. So, yeah, it was a very interesting start to living on the Tweed Coast. And during that period, working in real estate and just obviously learning the craft. But went from that to, unfortunately, my stepmother had cancer at the time, so they were doing the grey nomad thing. Thought I'd get into real estate. That was the time, I think, where I went, you know what, I really want to delve deep into sales. Mm-hmm. It was either real estate or car sales, and standing on a pavement with hot weather didn't really interest me. So real estate got its shot.
So when you say you come from humble beginnings, it's because you didn't have a lot of money as a kid?
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, I had a really good upbringing with my family and definitely got the opportunity at school and things like that. But I think just, you know, it was old school. Like, parents were a bit older. They gave me really good support and encouragement, but left home at 17 and then went out to rule the world, as most young males do, or young men, I should say.
People see you now as this super successful guy, like two offices now in the Tweed region.
Yeah.
And obviously all through letterboxes, as I said before, you're on billboards everywhere. But there's obviously a side of you before that. It's not an overnight success, right? It takes a long time to get from, like you said, humble beginnings to where you are now. Yeah. And so what would you say would be the number one attribute that's given you that's driven you to that position?
Well, I always joke about it, Matt, but it was an overnight success. It took 21 years. So, Yeah, look, probably the key ingredient, I think, was actually going through that journey. Like, I feel it built a lot of character. It definitely increased my drive. I think going through the battle with my stepmother, I was really close with her. I had a lot to be thankful for. I was a bit of a wild kid, so she was really good at guiding me to qualify to get into university and things like that, whereas I nearly dropped out in year 11, so that was a lot too.
Did you go to university?
Never went.
Isn't that interesting? Because yeah. a lot of people who are success stories don't go to university. I did one day at Bond University and then I was like, I'm out. Yeah, well, that was it for me.
I hope it wasn't expensive one day there.
Mate. No, it wasn't expensive at all. I think I bought a jumper though. I bought the pullover jumper that had Bond Uni on it.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I'm all in. I had to get all the merch, right? Yeah. And then I did like one day in the,
got the
in
kit,
the
classroom. You're out.
Yeah, and that was it. Then I went on and did Amazon.
Yeah. So I think that makes made a big difference to me going through that battle. And I always joke about it, but it's true. You go through something really traumatic in your life, and towards the end, you know, I moved back home. I hadn't lived at home since I was a kid. So to come back home and live with my father and my stepmother when she was basically wheelchair bound and help her go to the toilet and things like that when I wasn't at work, and to really understand a different part of life, and that life can be pretty cruel and it can be unforgiving, and also to give value on how much time you have and that it can be taken from you. I think I always joke about it, you know, you go in a boy, come out a man. I think that was definitely a big change for me. And then, look, love my dad to pieces, but he really struggled emotionally and mentally as well during that period. There's a lot of talk about men's health, especially in the 60s and 70s, and especially if they lose a loved one. And mm-hmm. I think that was a big factor there too for me. And it built a massive amount of drive. Like, we were sitting not too dissimilar here, except throw a circular table in the mix. And I remember we had $4.50 for the week to live on, and just after Vivian had passed, my stepmother. So that was pretty hard, you know, and I think I was really mentally and physically and emotionally challenged at that period. And, you know, I never gave up. Like, I think that was the big thing. I just kept turning up, and I certainly was struggling, certainly fighting my own demons at that point. But to come out the other side, really swinging hard. I remember in February I had nothing, and end of financial, I think it was just tipping over into July in settlement. So suddenly, you know, rags to riches, right? There was suddenly about 20, 30 grand after tax just in one month that suddenly hit the account, and, you know, I hadn't made any money for months. I was a commission-only agent. So that really turned things around and was the catalyst, I think, for our success moving forward.
Wow. I had no idea of that story. That's amazing, because those challenges come up as well just in any business. Like, you know, when I'm mentoring clients right now through the Amazon journey, they're all going through these obviously struggles. And you talked before about every day you just kept showing up, and that's basically what you've got to do on Amazon. You know, you might have a product that doesn't work out, but you just keep pushing through. Yeah. So has it been, I guess, with Kristen, your wife now, she's obviously been a big support.
Yeah, she's been a big rock. And I guess, you know, like you may have noticed, even going back to that story, it's still very hard talking about those things because it is raw. It's really, you know, the coal face of, you know, what we went through over that period. And I met Kristen not long after, and I'd love to say that was just a sail off into the sunset. But, you know, our business partner that I had, and she's a lovely woman, but had her own challenges, you know, to walk out at the beginning of the GFC and then, you know, meeting Kristen. I don't do things by halves, so Kristen not long after was pregnant as well. So that put its own complexities. We just started to get on track. Lucan was born. Unfortunately, he was had really major health issues too, and we actually nearly lost him at 18 months. He stopped breathing. He had we found out later that all the drugs we gave him because of his just a lot of challenges with. It sounds so simple, right? Like, you know, tonsils, adenoids, grommets, all those things that had to happen with him, and you know, unfortunately, he really struggled. So we gave him some pretty heavy drugs, and we know now that triggered his kidney disease later in life too. So we had a lot of challenges with Lucan in particular, very, very early in business. And I remember refinancing things and just tightening things up right at that point. And it certainly slowed me down a few notches.
Mm.
But, you know, you pull through. And it was interesting, you know, we had a receptionist slash property manager. And I sort of said to her at the time, look, you know, she said, look, Tate, it's not for me. I just want to quit. And it was a time when Lucan actually was really sick in hospital. I said, look, can you just hold in for a few days? And she walked out and I was like, far out, like, talk about getting a few kicks in the teeth, right? It was pretty hard time. So to come around through that, And then I remember, you know, it was interesting, you know, keep backing yourself, I think was, you know, consistent. Like, we got into property management, that come with so many challenges, but we backed ourselves, grew a property management business. We just kept backing ourselves in the sales division. And I don't recommend this, but we used maybe some money that might have been allocated for tax to grow our business. And,
temporary.
Right? And you know, especially back in those days, tax men would give you a little bit of leniency and payment plans and things like that. So yeah. You use what money
we've all been through those.
And resources you can. Yeah. I don't recommend it. You definitely, you know, do anything like that with severe caution. But we pulled through the other side, you know. And I remember, again, my next part of that journey was – I love my auctions. I had several hundred auctions under my belt as an agent. I actually called a couple of auctions just because I couldn't get an auctioneer in 2012. And we ran a big event. I think it was start of 2013, if memory serves me right. It was right at the point where it was the worst. You know, things were falling off the wheels. Mm. Buy a house in Benora Point for $275,000.
So things are pretty. 10 of those.
Yeah, things are dire. Like, average time on market at that stage was about 180 days, if you were lucky, sort of thing. And I mean, if you were lucky.
Mm.
And I talked to the team because, you know, I'm big on, you know, as much as I'm running and leading the ship to get advice from the team. And I said, because I had to make decisions with the other agents as well. And I said, guys, I want to call the auctions. You know, 0 out of 10 in January for sales was not exciting me by any stretch. And I thought, hey, at those numbers, it's only up.
Mm.
And I call it the golden gavel days. I actually went and I changed the whole mix for a while. I wasn't confident enough to call them in rooms because it's a lot of pressure. It's back to back and there's a lot of skill behind that. And I was like, I felt on site, I could absolutely crush it. And I just felt as well from a community-based perspective, it would build the brand. So I went back to on site for a while and it was actually the purple patch. We did 13 back to back. 30 days on the market. It was just incredible. I've never broken it, coincidentally. I've tried hard. You could argue in January this year we sold 14 out of 16 under the gavel. You could argue we broke it then, but we did miss two. So I still feel that that was probably the best time in my career and it was one of the toughest times. And it built a brand where we were somewhere in the mix. I don't know where we really sat in the market to definitely standing as the number one agency. And I was really proud of that. Like, I felt that we'd had a lot of adversity and a lot of challenges. It was also at a time where I was a franchise and they decided to put another one on the corner. And in hindsight, I think it was the best thing for me that, you know, I had to look at other options and other avenues and, you know, what makes the business great. And it was when I started to call it Tate Brownlee team.
Yeah. Before you go to the Tate Brownlee business now, the new brand, there's obviously some key things along that storyline, which, and I think it's so similar to the Amazon business, which is what I talk about is building your knowledge, which then builds power. Knowledge equals power, right? And so as you've gone through those transitions from, and even those really challenging times, but you've just gained this knowledge, which then gives you the confidence to then take the next step. Mm. So everything that you've sort of built up before even going into, okay, we're going to now do our whole kit and caboodle of Tate Brownlee real estate, which would have been huge at the time, you know, going outside of like a big brand, like a Ray White or something like that. What was that like?
Well, I think, to be honest, like I did everything wrong. You know, I look back now and go, I think it's all a journey, but the franchise was definitely the best thing that could have happened to me. And even I think a lot
when
about
when you say franchise, what do you mean franchise of another business?
Another, yeah. So I was under an umbrella of a different franchise, like a franchise company. And basically they were great in the foundations, you know, they taught me how to plan for GST. Such a simple lesson, but so important in business because, as we both know, if you haven't got the money for your GST and your PAYG, you're in all sorts.
Mm.
So tax planning was really paramount in the GFC. And I remember there was a guy called Anthony Meeker, and if you're watching, mate, you're an absolute legend. And people like that, they're influential in your lives. Like, they really changed your mindset about how to plan and run your business. There was the amazing Michelle Delaney. She was head of property management for the whole company, and she was incredible. Like, without question, the best property management consultant that I've ever met. And that's saying a lot. Look, there's a lot of other really influential people we met along the journey, but she was the standout. And even today, like, we'd still pick up the phone and have a chat with her. And she was Kristen's mentor. She was the one that made her great, you know. And so you meet all these people along the way. For the auctioneering, the legendary Phil Parker, aka the captain, he was terrific. And like you said, sourcing people out, you know, I'm big on that. Like, I said to Phil, like, what would it cost to just get you one-on-one and just teach me everything? And I remember he came to the office one day and, you know, I probably didn't look as sharp, you know, and he said, mate, if you want to run a multi-million dollar business, he said, you need to look sharp. Like, a little lessons, right? But they are everything. And it really made me reflect when I changed the brand. Like, that really resonated with me. Like, what's going to be the difference? What's going to be my one percenters from good to great? And unfortunately, like, when they opened up, you know, and it's typical franchise structure, right? They'll open up an office in every corner. I had to make a decision at that time. You know, it was hard. It wasn't good. They were definitely going to, you know, like, it's just reality, right? There's going to be some market share lost. You can't change that. And so how was I going to react? And I was very emotional, very upset about it. It was very hard to take. I felt like my own brand had turned on me. I mean, it is what it is, right? Whether that was mixed feelings, whether it was a bit of immaturity on my behalf, I don't know.
You were stabbed in the back?
Yeah, and like, was it warranted? Look, probably not. I mean, they're commercially making their money. I'm commercially making mine. You know, I look at it very differently now. But, you know, Steve Jobs, right? I love listening to podcasts, anything on YouTube, Blinkist, for people that don't know Blinkist, 15-minute short stories, like, all that stuff really is awesome. And Steve Jobs is one of the best, you know. The best lessons in life come poorly wrapped. And I think you have two choices, you know. Like you said, love those words, stabbed in the back. You can feel, I guess, a little bit selfish and poor me and victimized. And I think in COVID, everyone got a bit of a taste of that. You know, we can go the victim mentality, or we can go, well, what's the learnings from this? Like, what can make me better on a higher level? And I was like, right.
Mm.
The franchise thing, I went to another franchise, still pretty raw and vulnerable at that point, made another big mistake in hindsight, went in a business partnership that didn't work out to try and expand and grow the business, and that was not good either. And I guess, you know, like, I sound like I'm riddled with mistakes, but I guess it's part of the journey, right?
Yeah.
And I remember the wife coming to me and she said, we really made a big mistake with this second business and growing and going down this path. And I said to her, like, this is all on me. I take complete responsibility. And I think when you look at business, you got a choice, right? You can blame, you can look at your partner and go, oh, you know, you were involved in this or whatever, or you can take complete responsibility. I think that was the big difference. And I made a decision at that point. I said, I am going to make so much money in business that this is just going to be a bleep. It's not going to be an issue. And, you know, like, without going into the ins and outs of it, there was hundreds of thousands of dollars that went down the gurgler going through that journey. And it was a lot of strain. It was a lot of pressure. It was a lot of stress. You know, I look back now, I feel for the other guy too. Like, at the end of the day, it didn't work out. Again, I can go say that, you know, he wasn't a nice person or blame, make up some story. But at the end of the day, I think I look at the lessons I got from that, and that's what made us great. And I remember my solicitor at the time, she came to me, I was a franchise still, a different one, and she said, Tate, this is the time to go your own brand. And I'm thinking,
so someone else said that to you. You weren't correct. Thinking that yourself.
Look, we've been building behind this Tate Brownlee team brand since 2015, right? And subconsciously, I probably didn't even realize initially what I was doing. And then I had a great friend of mine, friends actually, I should say, because Mark and Lisa were definitely equally involved. Mark and Lisa Novak, that run Novak Properties, beautiful people, run a very, very successful company in DY, and just phenomenal, down earth people, but just crush it, right? Just the next level, part of the 0.1% in the industry, right? And they said to me, like, about independence and going your own brand. So the seed had been planted. There'd been a lot of background work building this plan, but you never feel ready. And what I learned when I visited them too was, like, to build it well before you want to start. So they've been probably a good 18 months of building this strategy, but it's always like, then there's the, oh my God, like, the reality of this. And, you know, there's all this money going down the gurgler with the business partnership that went south. There's, you know, pressure with that. My mum's my real mum, so just not to get confused, because obviously he was lucky in life to have two mums. She's got dementia. She's not well at this point. I've got a few things going on, right? And I made the decision to rip the bandage off and go tape around the real estate. And, you know, I also said to my wife, like, we're going to drop a couple hundred thousand. We're going to drop $250,000 on this. We're going to go all in. And, you know, that's talk about backing yourself. Mm. And at that point, at that time, and I think most people would agree, it's a serious amount of money, you know.
But just like someone who's perhaps been selling on Amazon for a while, they're building all this knowledge, they've been through the ups and downs of Amazon, because Amazon throw curveballs at you as well.
Mm.
And then you might come to a point where you want to buy an established Amazon business, right? And you might have to chuck in a couple of hundred thousand dollars to do that. But the only way you can do that is because you've already got the experience of already selling on Amazon. Just like what you've done, you've already had the experience of operating under a different franchise within real estate.
Mm.
And now it was an easy rip off the Band-Aid in a way.
Do you know what you've touched on there, Matt? I think for people listening in regards to Amazon, and I know absolutely nothing about that business. Like if I had 0.1% knowledge, I think I'd be doing well. So you know, other than obviously whatever.
You've got the right attributes though. You've got the right attributes up here.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think if I look at that business, and I would imagine it's no different to any business, you know, if you've got the money, and I think this is the problem with a lot of new business, right? If they're like me, you know, I always joke about it, but it's so true. You know, started the business on the smell of an oily rag. When the business partner walked out, you know, I refinanced my property, threw the last 40K into the business, and then it was sort of like sink or swim. And then you're sitting there in the GFC going, geez, is it even worth what I've just pulled out? Like I might end up selling it for less than what I – luckily that didn't quite happen. We just got out in front, but it could have, right? And I think – the biggest lesson is that backing yourself, but also too, what you said is so, so key. I think there's been a lot of wealth created in the last 3 or 4 years, especially in property. If people have got property, they've got equity, they've got resources that they didn't have before. And I feel that if there was an Amazon business where you can get the leg up, or like say hypothetically, a real estate business where you can get staff and a property management business.
Well, it's like what you're doing now where you're acquiring rent rolls.
Correct.
You're buying, so those who don't know what that is, you might want to say it's basically an existing business, isn't it?
Correct.
It's just buying it straight off the table.
Correct. And I often think, you know, what's more valuable? Like, and I thought when I started this, it was the property management, right? Oh, you get the property management. Now I'm starting to think, is it the team? Is it the people? If you get the right people, and this is interesting, right? Like things that aren't talked about in business, right? Currency. What's currency now? In a labor crisis that isn't openly discussed, right?
Are you going to say brand?
No.
No? Okay.
Surprisingly, I think the biggest currency right now is actually people. I think the value, and what I mean by currency is that the value and the worth, and not necessarily just monetary, right, but value of your business is people. Like, I mean, you've got a pretty, with respect to autonomous business that can high scale, minimum labor content. There's a totally different structure. But for businesses like mine and for the average business, you know, stereotypical Australian business out there, you know, you've got to have a team. You've got to have people. And I think in a business now, like it's interesting, right? I was reflecting on this the other day. What can I do to build culture in my team? And I think culture is a word that's thrown away way too comfortably. What about going, okay, we're going to have a Christmas party, but I'm going to book my Christmas party in June, right? And so we've just booked this awesome boat. We're going to sail out. It's like, you know, really awesome. You know, all the things that I used to dream about when I was living in the caravan park that I was going to do with my team, right? And I'm like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to book that now. I'm going to send it out to my whole team. And we're doing it in late October this year because, you know, it's going to be a short end to the year. But put it out to the team, get them excited about it so they've got something to look forward to. Like, what can you do to make your team excited about the journey that they're coming? So there's like, hey, there's these mini little destinations along the way. They're exciting. They're fun. Like, we're talking at the moment about maybe just even doing a lawn bowls on a Sunday, build culture with the team.
Yeah.
You know, we have a dinner. We just had a dinner, actually. We had a big Real Estate ARIC conference, which is the Australian Real Estate Conference. What things are key to make your team feel great? Like, your team, you know, they talk about customers. Your customers start with your team and then it filters down from there, right?
Yeah. But that whole story now scares me. because now having an Amazon-based business, mm-hmm. right? It's Amazon. You know, someone said the other day on one of the comments, they said, "Oh, Amazon, oh, I think you've missed the boat on Amazon if you're going to join now."
Yeah.
I said, "Dummy, it's not an Amazon business. Yeah, it's an Amazon-based business. Amazon is purely a distribution model.
Mm.
That's all it is, to help you get more product out. Now, you can either tap into it and use it or not. And considering it's like one of the number one distribution models in the world,
right.
Do you want to be in it or not?
That's
so
right.
If you don't, then just go back to selling on the street corner.
And right? Matt, but, you know, it's interesting you talk about that. And whilst we've had no dealings with Amazon, you know, we create a lot of opportunities and we find a lot of opportunities in the market in terms of branding. And so touching on branding, right, in regards to what you're discussing. So we order everything from like our pens online. I've got a local distributor. I try and keep it Australia-based where I can. I love to see Australian money in Australia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everything where we can, we buy them locally. Our gift bags are bought locally. Look, I'm not saying they don't get manufactured in China. I think we'd be, you know, poor Dick yeah. Smith. I mean, he tried.
It's too expensive to manufacture in Australia.
Right. And that's the problem. And I mean, poor Dick Smith. I mean, he tried, right? I love Dick Smith. I worked for Dick Smith Electronics when I was a kid. It was actually my first sales job and what he stood for. But unfortunately, you know, manufacturing in Australia has been lost. Hopefully it comes back, but we'll see. But I think realistically, what you're saying is so true. Like, I think about it when I started real estate. Oh, realestate.com's come. Real estate's over. There won't be the real estate agent.
Mm.
You know, the real estate agent, the main reason you pay the agent is to bridge the gap. You pay them to negotiate between the buyer and seller to get a premium price for your property, right? That will never change. When there's human beings behind it, and we'll definitely segue into AI very shortly, but that part is so relevant now as it is at any time. Whether it's AI, whether it's Amazon, whether it's real estate, whatever it is, there'll be tools that come out, right, that get excited. So like AI is in itself as a business, right? There's opportunity with that. Amazon is a business. There's opportunity with that. But there's also these products and services like AI, Amazon, all these things that come out. And it's like, who's going to be the forward-thinking person to create an exciting model? And, you know, you only need to look at Elon Musk for this, right? Who's going to be that forward-thinking person? You know, they actually, interestingly enough, if you look at Elon Musk's DISC profile, he's actually called the architect.
Right.
High dominant, but high compliance. Interesting mix. Mm-hmm. So very, very detailed, very, very calculated, but off the charts with drive and ambition and all those things, right?
Yep.
And they're the people that are going to take Amazon like you have, seize it and then launch it.
I'm just leveraging it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all I'm doing is leveraging Amazon for distribution. You touched on before about when realestate.com came out and everyone got scared about there's going to be no real estate agents. Well, I just saw a report the other day that said that people are now going back to bricks and mortar retail stores.
Yeah.
So they're getting sick of shopping online now. Yeah. They actually want to go out for it's now become a novelty to go to a shop and have the experience of walking into a store and seeing people and mixing with people.
Mm.
Isn't that fascinating? So now there's this sort of like migration back. Now, I don't know if it's going to be as big as the transition of what perhaps the online businesses took away.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at something like, you know, I was thinking about Culture Kings again the other day.
Right. I was just thinking the same thing, man. You were in my head.
Yeah?
Yeah. What a legend of a guy. And start off in the markets, right? At Carrara Markets, local story, Gold Coast guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a great story. I freaking love it.
Yeah.
But I thought he didn't have that many stores. It was like, I think a store on the Gold Coast, maybe a store in Sydney, and I think a really big store in Las Vegas.
That's right.
And I thought, but those stores alone, because I think he netted something in the vicinity of 300 million. I think it was 600 million, including shares or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, those three stores alone wouldn't have given him that result, right, that sellout. But what it was the online presence.
Mm.
Like, and I would love to know what the figures were, but I'm going to say that his online business would dominated the bricks and mortar. I'm just guessing there, but that would make sense why his sale was so big.
But let's delve deep with that. Like, it's interesting, right? I think about this a lot. So, you know, the way he's marketed his brand, right, did the shop fronts, and this is something we can never work out the exact metrics on it, but I think it'd be off the charts. How many people walked past the brand, tripped over the brand, whatever you want to call it, somewhere along the lines, walked into a shop, saw it in some sort of marketing tool that he used, right, and then went online. So, like, I'll often Good example, right? I've been to Culture Kings shops coincidentally a few times. Do you know what, Matt? True story, never bought anything there. But online, hey, I've got my Reebok pumps.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Have you got Reebok pumps?
Absolutely.
Jealous.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to go back into the 1990s, right?
I love those.
Yeah. It was like my favorite shoe that I never got as a kid.
Yeah.
Mum was like, why are we wasting money on like expensive shoes? And so like, you know, the old nostalgia. Always.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. One of these Reebok pumps. And like, they're awesome.
Well, that's why I've got these on. These are like 92 model Air Max BW Classics.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Love these shoes.
You know, I remember when MJ, Michael Jordan, he said about, you know, his shoes, he put on his, whatever they were, Air Jordans, the 1989 model or whatever they were. And he said, like, in the last game, he got, well, whatever it was, 28 points, 30 points, whatever the legend did, right? Mm. And it was interesting. He goes, at the end of the game, like, he had blisters and sores. He's like, how did I ever wear these shoes, right? Because the quality of the shoes had come such a long way.
Yeah.
But what a story, right? And I think those stories are what we remember as kids, right? We grew up and the basketball era was really taking off. You know, the Bulls were just dominating, you know, and it was really exciting time. Michael Jordan was the GOAT, still is the GOAT as far as I'm concerned. But the things that he did, and it comes back to branding, right? And I think that's where Culture Kings really got it. They took people like Michael Jordan and they got it. They went back in time and they hit all these different markets and didn't single out and just go, oh, let's make it for 20-something.
Mm.
You know, here we are, you know, at that other end, right? And we've got kids and things like that. And we're buying the gear there. And like, so you're not capping out a market either. I think it was really interesting the way, yeah, he saw the big picture and he saw the big picture from day one when he was in that Carrara Markets. He had that vision.
Yeah.
I was actually lucky enough actually at the Southport School. They had a business lunch and actually heard his story.
Okay.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, you know, he got down and talked also about how important, you know, your mental health is. And he actually does that, was it cryotherapy or whatever it is? And he's got his own.
Yeah, he said cryotherapy. I was like, he's crying? No, is that therapy?
But he literally has his own get up. Like, yeah. I think it's 180G or something. He's just dropped it in there. So if you're lucky enough to buy his house, I think if I heard a memory, it might have even been on the market recently. But if you buy his house, you get that. Mm. Like, it's just the full
kit. Let's go back to the branding though, because this branding is so important with Amazon, right? Mm. Your Amazon-based product and your listing. And you said before that someone said to you, you've always got to look sharp.
Yeah.
And that's the same with your Amazon product, because someone can only go to the Amazon website and that's their first taste of your product. So the images, right? You can't touch the product, right? You can't pick it up and feel it. So the images have to be unbelievable, which is the same as, I guess, you know, your presentation has to be unbelievable. When you walk into your real estate office, has to be unbelievable. When someone picks up your brochure, right? And I know from a fact, because I receive your brochure in the mail, there's your brochure. And usually for some reason, I don't know if this is like some sort of conspiracy, but they always put all the real estate agent ones together.
Yeah.
Like, so you get like five different real estate agents in one day, like right? And your brochure is always just leaps and bounds above everybody else's. There's people in there that are still printing in black and white.
Mm. Right? I know, right?
Right. What are they doing? They're trying to save money, like by presenting a property in black and white.
And it's interesting, you know, like I thought about this when we launched the circular signboard. So starting from the beginning and working through, you know, a lot of agents had a lot of different ideas about doing different things. Then they've looked at the cost and then they've gone, there's no way we're going to do that, right? It's interesting you mentioned the and I'm guessing you're talking about the booklet we do with the rundown on the performance in the area. So we do one for the Tweed Shire. We also do one for the Tweed Coast.
Right, which is also in that though, Tate. It's not just you having obviously a sales pitch for your office and the listings, but also you're providing valuable information.
Correct. And that's what it's more about. And I think about shelf life, right? A booklet like that, it might sit at home on the table for up to a month, right? It literally could. And, you know, it's certainly not expensive. Like thousands of dollars goes into that in the creation of it, all that sort of planning. And then also obviously the cost of manufacture, there's 10,000 I think that goes out. And you've got that going out for Tweed Shire as well as Tweed Coast. And they're different booklets. You wouldn't have probably seen the Tweed Coast one we do because it goes to a different market. But again, yeah, it's huge in terms of what we create. But like you said, it makes an impact.
It's a huge difference. And when people are going to this, going back to Amazon, seeing this Amazon listing and they're seeing the images for the first time, if those images aren't amazing, then you can lose sales, right? So back to, you know, if your presentation isn't great or your front office staff are no good, you know, that you could potentially lose sales. There's lots of talk at the moment about AI, and I did a post recently talking, and a video talking about all the jobs that are probably going to go with AI. I mean, even just in the Amazon logistics and things like that. So in the warehousing, there's going to be robots, you know, picking and packing orders. So all those staff are gone. Even right now, you can go to the US, you've got AI tools within McDonald's drive-thrus, right? Burger King drive-thrus. So that window order taker, they're now gone.
Correct.
Right? So there's all these little things. And honestly, I can't wait to get it. They're talking about having an Elon Musk robot, Tesla robot, in your house for $20,000.
Yeah, wow.
I would get one for sure.
Yeah,
right. It'd be good. You could just do all the cleaning, right?
Do you reckon it'd be 20,000, more like 200,000? Really?
No, they're saying they're going to mass produce it, and he obviously wants economies of scale. He wants it in everyone's lounge room, right?
Wow.
So that being
said, what's his ETA? He's always ambitious.
I don't think it's that long. I mean, have you seen on? Yeah. You go Google it. Look at the Tesla robots. They're incredible, right? Yeah, they're like cracking eggs and stuff.
Yeah.
But could you see a future where you perhaps have AI? Like let's talk about even an AI robot, like standing at the door of an open house, taking names and screening people or something.
Yeah, look, I think that definitely has an impact and a role. I think for our industry, it's so human based that's always going to play a part. What I find intriguing about AI, and I think AI will definitely take a lot of jobs, and it will also create a lot of jobs. So at the moment, though, for me, it's still very much its infancy. Like, I really went into the Delve Deep AI and I just tried it on text. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I paid for the highest quality AI tool that I could get. I threw it a heap of text, just bullet points, different things, and I just want to see what this thing could do, right? I also threw it the floor plan, and I also gave it I think I tried to give it a video, but that didn't seem to work out. So I gave it as much content as I could, and I just wanted to see what it would spit out at the other end. What I realized was that it's still very much at its infancy, and it's interesting. I think that, you know, and it's going to happen very fast, but these AI tools need to come up with better, like learn as you go, kind of every time you give them something, it improves a bit better, because I feel that's still a big lag, and I feel like it's still this big generic, you know, and it was a paid for subscription, so it wasn't the cheap one or anything like that, free go. And it was like, you know, your square meters are this and da-da-da. It was very still official, I guess.
So what you're saying then is you don't think AI is going to have a that big of an impact. But if you talk about AI robots, that big of an impact on the real estate industry.
Not yet. Like, I think there's a lot of key things they've got to get right. And I think it could take genuinely 1 to 2 years to really iron out.
What about even back-end stuff?
Well, this is the problem, right? If it can't create good text at this stage, and that's like a pretty primal, what we're talking about robots, right? Mm. I'm talking about just some ad copy. It's still got a long way to go to be adaptive and learn and understand formulas and formats and things like that.
I don't know, Tate. I've seen some pretty good stuff out there.
Well, we might have to have a chat later, mate. Yeah. You give me through a bit of a flick. But, you know, this was ChatGPT. I spent the extra money to get the right, you know, the right level on it. So I think it's going to be a very adaptive and it's going to change very fast.
But are you going to think from a cost perspective? Because I know even if you think about a restaurant, okay, if you've got an AI machine who can just make burgers and chips, pull shakes or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. I now don't have to pay a wage.
Yes.
I don't have to pay sick pay, holiday pay, overtime, penalty rates for weekends.
Yeah.
Extra payroll tax.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The list goes on. I don't have to worry about people calling in sick. Do you know, I had a case the other day where during the public holiday, not a single person called in sick.
Wow. That's
why? Because they're getting paid extra.
Yeah, double time.
Not only that, there was people on standby. They were calling in to say, I'm on standby.
Yeah.
Okay. And then every other day of the year, if it's not a public holiday, sick day, sick. It freaking drives me nuts.
It's not something we're going to change overnight with AI, Matt, but I share your frustration.
Yeah, it would. I get the AI robot in there.
Yeah,
you get a few. And then next thing you know, I'll be saying, oh, can I come in and work because I can replace the AI machine? I'm like, dude, this AI machine's coming in every day and doesn't even talk back to me and just shows up and does the job, right? And I don't have to pay that guy penalty rates. I don't have to pay the guy frigging payroll tax.
Correct. And look, you're pretty forward thinking, right, with where things are going. The challenge that I still have, right, and I remember with computers it was the same thing, right? We could have these blitzkrieg computers, like, and for people who don't know that term, like lightning kind of operation, right? And yet what they do is they intentionally hold back the technology because the average person isn't ready as the consumer to consume it, and it would be too overwhelming for them. And my biggest concern at the moment is that I feel, like you said, we've got all this technology. I think it's all coming together. The problem is we're not seeing probably, like, good example, and you mentioned Elon Musk, right? The tools and the systems and the things I reckon he can get a hold of versus what we can get a hold of could be as much as 5 years difference, right? Like, who knows? He's probably got robots running around now, right?
He's got robots in his factories.
There you go. So this is the problem, right? Like, how, and I think the other disadvantage we have in Australia, love the country, love everything about it, but it's a bit like the cars, right? The cars come out in the other countries first, 3 years prior. They get these amazing cars, and we're sitting here in Australia waiting for, with bated breath, for this new exciting car. And I know you're a car buff, so probably shouldn't get you started on
and
that.
Not buying a Tesla, by the way.
But, you know, this is the challenge I think we have. Like, I'm really excited about AI. I think it brings a lot to the table. But the frustration, and I can tell you're already frustrated. You want your AI robots today, but when are we going to get it? When's going to be the launch? And it was a bit like the cars. Like, there was a lot of hype, a lot of excitement around the cars. It was an incredible marketing strategy that he did too. And Elon did, it made his company take off, right? It's going to be the same with the robots, I'm sure. But when's that going to happen? And what does that look like? And, you know, yeah, stay tuned.
So let's talk about then, we talked about attributes. And I think you've got fantastic attributes, the attributes, right?
Yeah.
The quality attributes that you could transition from just any business. You're in the real estate business now, you could easily transition into the Amazon business. And I think the number one attribute is, resilience, because you've been through so much in your life that when challenges come your way, you can just overcome them, right? And there's so many people, just not in just the Amazon business, but just business in general, that the first challenge that comes their way, they fold, right? I think part of my success, and definitely I can see from your success, is there's been periods in your life where you've literally had your back up against the wall and you're like, shit, dude, we have to do this. If we don't make this work, we're fucked.
Yeah. It's game time.
Yeah. And I think that's been your strength. Yeah.
Do you know, you touch on, Amazon, AI, those things. And I think the most important thing, like, definitely a bit reserved, just knowing how slow things roll out here, right, in Australia. But it's interesting. At the same token, though, you've got to be adaptive. You've got to be the one to embrace change and to look at opportunity and to delve deep and take advantage of it. Also, too, from my company perspective, and probably a little bit different to yours, It's such a fine line, right? You want to be the first kid on the block with a new AI tool if it benefits the company, right? No question. You know, resourceful, innovative, adaptive, and fast. Fast is king. You know, I think about service and a client I was dealing with yesterday and, you know, hey, has he got his report? Has he got this? Has he got that? Has everything happened like within the space of a couple of hours? Like, I want to be the best, right? Speed is king. Speed is currency. But also too, you've got to adapt to that change. So if new tools, new systems, however, and there's a big however with it, and I think all business have to be very mindful of this. There's no point going down a black hole of AI and spending, like, going to see all these courses and training and everything if it doesn't have any value to offer your business. You've got to look at what's going to, like, you know, and a tool that may work, like you mentioned robots, right? Robots for you, I think, would have a lot bigger impact short term, definitely in your, you know, your the fast food world, and definitely in Amazon, because obviously product, manufacturer, warehousing. For real estate, it's still very person to person, 100%. You could have someone at front of house collecting the details and all those sorts of things. As long as you're still getting engagement, someone's still got to be in the house, engagement, relationship building and all those, you know, and it goes back to the basics, right? Realestate.com was going to change the world in real estate. We wouldn't need real estate agents. Then it was virtual walkthroughs. Everyone's going to have virtual walkthroughs and it's going to be all on realestate.com. People won't need agents anymore. Now it's, hey, AI is going to come in and disrupt the whole world. And there'll always be disruption. And I think, like you're saying, hey, you can next level this. You can take it to the next level. I think that there'll be a lot of opportunity created from, like, the AI too. Like, someone's going to have to, at the end of the day, fulfill all the different functions of different responsibilities and roles in these new industries that are coming out of this this product too. But yeah, there's also going to be some labor content saving, definitely. But I mean, we're already, and I think for companies that aren't, they've got to be looking at labor as well offshore for different tools and strategies that can benefit them as well. And the reality is, right, and I don't think it takes jobs away. I think there's jobs out there that, rightly or wrongly, you know, a lot of like locals may not want to do those jobs, and those jobs are available for people that want to do them.
Yeah, what for, right? AI machine.
Yeah, well, AI, yeah. Offshore.
Exactly.
Whatever, you know.
Hey, Tate, listen, I know you've got to get going because you've got clients to see, you've got real estate to sell, yes. Deals to do.
That's right.
So I want to thank you so much for coming in today and really appreciate you sharing your story. And I can see there's a lot of synergies between your real estate business and Amazon and having the right attributes as well. And maybe you want to look at going into Amazon and maybe scaling across the world.
And maybe throw some Bitcoin in, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks.
All right, guys, no worries. Thank you so much for joining me on Amazon Ecom Secrets. Look forward to seeing you next time. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning into Amazon Ecom Secrets. If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to show your support is to give a 5-star review on Apple Podcast and Spotify, and make sure to subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss an episode. You can also find more at I'm Matthew Fraser on all social media platforms. Thanks so much. Take care.